Special thanks, by the way, to Mark Farmer, our main guest. He's just ahead in about a half hour as we talk about the military applications and the scientific applications of HAARP, of course. Thank you, Mark, for giving us this extra half hour with Jerome Corsi and your phone calls when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Jerry Corsi, what's your gut tell you? Do you feel something is happening? If Chertoff's got a gut, so do you.
I think something's happening, George. I think we're headed for some kind of a crisis, some kind of an emergency, a terrorist attack, an epidemic of avian flu or some other declared health emergency. I know there's a crisis going on right now in the stock market when the traders get back the 1st of September. I think there's going to be a major crisis in the stock market, which is going on, worldwide meltdown, and the bursting of the credit that stimulated the housing bubble and now the commercial paper bubble. That's going to burst. It has burst. There's probably some $3 trillion to $10 trillion. It's hard to even estimate how much of debt out there that is now worthless, and that's going to have to be those losses are going to have to be realized by financial institutions over the next few months. We're headed into a recession. There's just too much work going on from the White House about emergencies, health emergencies, terror emergencies, three carrier battle groups positioned off of Iran. I just think George Bush is not going to go easily into the night here.
Where are we getting all this money, by the way? Another $50 billion for Iraq.
We're just
when people are losing their jobs. I'm driving around the streets of St. Louis today. There are for sale signs up all over the place. I got to imagine it's the same throughout this country. Real estate agents are crying. Nobody's buying houses in the numbers they used to. Yet we can come up with $50 billion more dollars. Where's that money coming? Are they just printing it?
We're just printing it. It's a travesty. The Federal Reserve, which of course is not a government institution, it's a private bank, and it creates debt for the government every time it prints money. But the Federal Reserve has been printing money like there was no tomorrow, and it's already caused massive inflation. The government is lying about inflation. They've taken food, and they've taken energy out of what they call the core inflation. But everybody knows there's inflation. Just take a look. When it costs $50 to $75 to fill a gas gas tank, you've got an SUV, it could cost $75 or $80. When you take a family of four to a movie, and just buying popcorn and sodas, you're spending anywhere between $50 to $70, depending upon where you live.
Hey, when's the last time you took a friend of yours to a baseball game?
It's outrageous. You know, $100, George, doesn't mean anything today anymore compared to what it meant to even 5 or 10 years ago. There's tremendous inflation, and printing money is inflation. We're headed into a recession. With this globalism, people are going to be losing their homes and losing their jobs. Outsourcing is going on left and right. It was never the contention in international trade that a country's competitive advantage like China should be that it subsidizes its currency, it uses slaves and near slaves to produce the goods, and allows its manufacturing companies to destroy the environment. If we allow our corporations to go to China to use those advantages, like Chrysler shutting down manufacturing of automobiles in Detroit and going to China with Chery, a Chinese company, to make cars, to import them into North America, we're going to lose every manufacturing job in the United States. And, George, it's also immoral. We fought a civil war largely over civil rights, but by the end of the Civil War, we decided it was immoral to use African-American slaves in southern agricultural businesses. Now we're, wink, wink, allowing our corporations, our multinational corporations, to go to China and use Chinese slaves. It was wrong in the Civil War, before the Civil War, and it's wrong now.
It sure is. Back to the phones. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, good morning, George and Jerome. Well, while you're on a fiscal bent, a challenge to the U.S. national debt is the development of what's known as an endowment reserve, the amassing of a principal that does not touch the interest from which goes to cover your capital and operational expenditures. So given the figure for the capital and operational for the last fiscal year, you multiply that by 10, and you get the size of the endowment you should be headed for. You can't use the tax base, maybe lotteries if they can be trusted, or other funding mechanisms. Again, it is not touched in the interest from which goes to cover what you need. So it's a challenge to the way in which money is collected and spent on what we need in democracies in the free Western world. But back to the other subject.
Let me comment on that.
Once
a year, the Treasury conducts an audit of the U.S. budget on a GAAP accounting basis, according to generally accepted accounting practices. And the last report that was done on the GAAP accounting of the U.S. deficit showed that when we take into account the net present value of the future obligations we're creating today on Medicare and Social Security, our deficit is $4.6 trillion. Not 200 and some billion that George Bush wants to represent.
Well, you've got to counter that. You've got to develop another mechanism to establish that.
Right.
The notion of an endowment reserve is the only way.
There is none. There is no lockbox for the today for Social Security like Al Gore talked about. There isn't one. What you're talking about would be a brand new concept and one that should be done with these future obligations we're creating.
Fine, I hope somebody's listening to you tonight, Jerry, on this program and does something about some of these things, you know?
Well, George, also, I've written just for a really important point. I wrote that the Mexican trucks, I read the Mexican government websites in Spanish, and they were announcing, even last week, and I wrote about it, that 37 Mexican trucking companies have been approved to come across the border, and it was going to start on September 1st.
Who owns those companies?
That's, and today, George, the Teamsters are filing a federal suit, an injunction to block the Mexican trucks from coming across the border, and the Teamsters agreed. They announced that they've confirmed that the Department of Transportation is going to let the first Mexican trucks roll on Saturday, on September 1st, which is I can't believe it. This is Labor Day, and it's the day on which the Department of Transportation, while Congress is adjourned.
And we're supposed to be honoring America's working man and woman.
Are going to allow the first Mexican trucks to come across the border. And the only reason to have them here is because they're cheaper. They undercut U.S. trucking. All the truckers on the road know what a threat this is going to be. And I wrote last week that the Department of Transportation is also lying. There is not a single certified drug or alcohol testing laboratory in Mexico. The Department of Transportation is allowing the Mexican drivers to send specimens to U.S. labs without being able to validate that the specimens belong to the person who's submitting them.
Let's take some more calls. We'll go to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah. Good evening, George and Jerry.
Hi. Go ahead, sir.
I drive a big rig. I'm driving one right now, matter of fact, for the third largest grocery retailer in the nation. And nobody's ever mentioned the fact that when George Sr. lost, one of the last things he said on TV was, get ready, one world order's coming and you can't stop it. And another thing is nobody ever mentioned in all the campaigns about Neil Bush and Silverado banking scandal back in the 80s. And nobody ever mentioned the fact that these truck drivers that are going to be coming from Mexico, they're not randomly drug tested. They're not scrutinized like all of us. And, it never ends. It's a never-ending story. And another thing is that they put all of us drivers through Homeland Security training. It was mandatory. We had no choice. The company paid us to go to a meeting. It was an hour or 2 hours. Now, the only thing was voluntary, whether you signed up for it or not. And, of course, probably less than 1% of any of our drivers ever signed up for it. But they probably got a big kickback. And it's been said that our CEO for this grocery outfit is on the board of Homeland Security. I don't know if that's true or not. I've never read it, but that's what, you know, a lot of people have said.
If I could comment on that.
You know, I mean, it just seemed like through deregulation, fuel costs and everything, they added right back to all the consumer, and the consumer thinks, well, I can handle the gas. Well, they don't understand that you have to buy milk and bread and everything else, and look at the cost that's increased. I mean, I deliver it. I see it every day. Plus, I have to buy it.
Well, Jerry, why don't we, if we all agree that this one world government is coming and maybe we can't stop it, why don't we just get on the old bandwagon and support it?
Well, George, the program of the one world government is there's going to be no middle class. There's only going to be those at the very top running the major multinational corporations.
And then everybody else will be on the bottom.
And I mean, I just, you know, as a kid, I read George Orwell's, you know, 1984 and Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. And then I started listening to these speeches George H.W. Bush gave, two of them, including one to a joint session of Congress, talking about a new world order. And Bill Clinton continued with the new world order speeches. You know, in terms of the Mexican trucks, so, George, we can't just allow it to happen. Otherwise, we lose our inalienable rights. We lose the freedoms the United States was created to preserve. We've created the greatest middle class that's ever been created in the history of the world. We can't just allow it to be ignored and thrown away for the greed of another $1 billion for people like Bill Gates. The Mexican trucks, there's also, I wrote about this extensively in the late, great USA, there is also no national criminal database in Mexico. The drug smuggler in the Ramos and Compian case, the two Border Patrol agents who are today in federal prison for 11 and 12 years each.
For shooting a drug smuggler in the butt.
The drug smuggler testified at trial. He admitted he's a drug smuggler, and guess what? He had a commercial driver's license from Mexico at the time he committed the crime.
And
that was fully validated at the trial.
I don't know what to say, Jerry. Wild card line?
It's staggering.
You're on the air.
If George Bush thinks under the Security and Prosperity Partnership we can just merge with Mexico, we're going to merge with Mexico's corruption, with its drug corruption. The FBI, I attended an FBI seminar in El Salvador a few months ago. The FBI told the 13 Central American countries, Mexico, that this MS-13, the criminal gang from El Salvador, drug dealing, tattooed head to toe, is in 42 states and 2,500 communities.
And growing.
And growing and going back and forth the border as if it were a revolving door.
Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with Jerry Corsi on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, yeah, George. Go ahead.
Yeah, I haven't talked to you in quite a while, about a year and a half. I wanted to ask Dr. Corsi real quick right up front. I've got two questions, but, you know, it's amazing that Abraham Lincoln and not Teddy Roosevelt, Ike Eisenhower, both Eisenhower, of course, right before he left office in 1959, warned about the corporate state and the plutocracy that was coming ahead. You know, they might as well have been marionettes or clowns talking, you know, and making these were presidents, two of the best presidents. Lincoln certainly maybe the greatest ever. But anyway, Dr. Corsi, I wanted to ask you if you thought
that. Let me comment on that because you're right, George. Just before he left office, Eisenhower's farewell speech was beware of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
And that was a tremendous speech coming from former general who was largely responsible for winning World War II.
Yeah.
And also Lincoln, little known, both Lincoln and Jack Kennedy gave speeches and were writing about secret societies and the entire plots to have, you know, one world government type structures.
Yeah.
John Kennedy gave a speech to that.
It's amazing. And Lincoln saw that
In
1860 before he was assassinated in a speech, you know, I mentioned the...
They both knew the power of corporate greed and what it would do to the human soul.
Yeah. Lincoln took away the power of the corporations, or he loosened up the ties. You know,
well, so Lincoln was no, you know, saint. I did not. I would still object, had I been alive, to the suspension of, you know, habeas corpus and other things that Lincoln did.
Yeah.
But Lincoln was aware of this issue, and he did understand the value of the United States of America to be preserved,
right,
the liberties that we are granted.
Yeah. Another thing, Dr. Corsi, real quick, don't you think that the erosion of the Constitution really began in December 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act,
The Federal Reserve Act, I don't think, was even constitutionally approved as an amendment. I still doubt that it was fully ratified.
No, it wasn't. And Woodrow Wilson signed it, of course, which I think he was pressured into do.
And he said later that he regretted signing it. He said it was the greatest
I think if Teddy Roosevelt had been president at the time, they probably would have had to shoot him.
Well,
I don't think TR would have went along with it. They probably would have had to.
We don't need a Federal Reserve system. It's a private bank. Even Jack Kennedy printed greenback dollars. You remember them. They were those dollars with the red seal. He printed those before he was killed. In fact, there are many people who still believe that that was one of the reasons he was killed. But we do not need a Federal Reserve. The Constitution gives the U.S. government the right to issue its own currency through the Treasury without a central bank.
Let's take one or two more calls, and then we're going to wrap it up with you, Jerry. First-time caller line. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Oh, for me?
Yes.
Oh, good morning, George and Jerry. It's a pleasure to finally speak to you, and keep up the good work. It doesn't surprise me what Bush is doing by selling out our sovereignty. And it seems like there's been more corruption since he's been in office. He feels like he can pick and choose what laws he feels to follow. The question is, if he was impeached, you think things could change? If not, what can we do as Americans to start making some good, positive changes in the United States and the world, for that matter? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry. First of all, I don't think we'll ever have the impeachment proceedings. There's not that much time anymore.
There's not much time left. But yet the grassroots is tremendously powerful. The grassroots rose up and stopped this Kennedy-McCain-Shamnesty bill that George Bush twice tried to shove down the Senate. There's 14 states now that have voted state resolutions saying no North American Union, get out of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and don't build any NAFTA superhighways like the Trans-Texas Corridor. It's 4 football fields wide highway parallel to Interstate 35 that's going to be financed by Cintra, C-I-N-T-R-A of Spain, who will own the toll rights on that highway for 50 years after it's built. The people can stop these things. What it takes, George, is great programs like yours, where people can hear the truth, and you hear and feel from the people who call in their awareness in their daily lives of situations that the mainstream media will not cover. And again, I applaud Coast to Coast and you, George, for bringing this message to your listeners when it's being shut out. The truth is being shut out by the mainstream media.
All right, let's take one more call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Is that me?
Yes, sir. Take it away.
Yes, but two quick questions. Thank you very much for doing this program. It's valuable. I feel that the best and most heroic, and, you know, the flower of our youth are being wasted, you know, in this expedition in Iraq to draw down our military assets. So we will have to depend on UN peacekeepers to, you know, help us out. In other words, be invited to invade our land. To carry out any emergency, power failure, these vectored pathogens, and whatever might else happen. I also feel that every great plague has happened because of overpopulation and the conditions that some of our immigrants are living in, 150 to a house, is going to make this pathogen flash to the United States from one corner to the next. And they pretty much handle all food in this country from seed to plate. And I think we had a real issue here.
Well, and the globalists, Jerry, the globalists want a population reduction from 6.5 billion, where we are right now, and it'll grow to 9 billion in several more years. They want it down to 500 million. That's the figure I keep hearing.
It's the UN Program for Sustainable Development. You know, one of the exercises the military, it was Ardent Security 06 was the name of the exercise.
Just a few seconds left.
And they game played a plague coming out of Mexico and infecting the United States. It was one of the exercises done as a health emergency under U.S. NORTHCOM. George, it's been a great honor to be with
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Jerry.
And thank you for the opportunity to answer so many questions. There's been great callers. I'm impressed again by the outpouring of truth that come from the coast-to-coast listeners. And, George, it's been a great honor to be with you tonight.
Jerry Corsi. All his information is on the website, coasttocoastam.com. Back in a moment with Mark Farmer. The rest of the program continues. Well, get ready, because in a moment, Mark Farmer joins us. We're going to talk about the High Frequency Active Aural Research Program. You know it as HARP. What's new with it? That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Farmer, he's a writer, photojournalist, military media affairs consultant, a retired U.S. Coast Guardsman. Farmer is currently the special correspondent to Combat Aircraft Magazine. He's a freelance contributor to numerous other publications, ranging from the Associated Press to Aviation Week and Space Technology. He broke the HARP story with his September 1995 popular science article, Mystery in Alaska. And he's a recognized expert in the subjects of advanced weaponry, ballistic missile defense, black world programs, nuclear, chemical, biological, radiological, and directed energy weapons, combat search and rescue, and military aviation and space projects as well. Our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Good evening, George. Thanks for the invite. I'm glad to be here.
My pleasure. Guys, I want to talk with you not only about HARP today, but also you were one of those who uncovered the operations out there at Area 51 a long time ago, weren't you?
Correct. Back in the early 80s, myself and a band of fellow journalists and engineers called the Interceptors. We were the guys that pretty much were the first to shine a serious spotlight on the installation, yes.
Tell me a little bit about how you came about finding out about that place.
I first heard, I grew up as an aircraft and space aficionado. And as a young boy, I always talked to pilots and people within the Air Force, and I was in the Civil Air Patrol. And I knew a couple guys who flew the SR-71. I grew up in Northern California, and Beale Air Force Base is where the SR-71 came out. And back in the late 70s, they told me of this place that was in Nevada that was cosmic. That was the term that they used back then. Then after my time in the military, knowing that the testing facility was there at Groom Lake, I decided to use my talents and find out what was going on there, at least as much as I could. And sure. I could come from the perspective of wanting to find out and eventually fly in the stuff that they have built there.
Did you think at any point, Mark, that there was something out of this world going on there at all? Or did you think it was strictly, confidential military information?
You know, the stories that emanate from the place are both complex and potent and very hard to verify. I know for certain that the United States has built saucer-shaped or lenticular-shaped aircraft and spacecraft. So I also know a few people who have seen such vehicles out there. And I myself have seen particularly one thing that I saw back in 94, a glowing orb flying around the place. But I think that was a result of high-power radars being used, or maybe the firing of a charged particle beam accelerator into the atmosphere. But I know that we've built some very advanced things, and I think a lot of things, vehicles and systems that we built at Groom Lake could easily be construed as being certainly otherworldly in their performance capabilities. I still leave open the possibility that we have made contact, that that could be a possibility. I don't totally discount it.
Have you had any contacts at all from within that region who has told you, yes, we've got reversed engineered technology, we've had a crashed saucer, we've had aliens, we're hiding some of this here. Has anybody admitted that to you?
Yes, but once again, it's very hard to verify. And also, we know for certain that the CIA used the, during U-2 and A-12 and SR-71 programs, their early times there, they used UFO reports to cover up what was going on there. So I don't put it past certain elements of the government or certain industries that have worked there to use or fabricate, an alien story as some sort of cover. So once again, until they open up the museum at Groom Lake, or until they, let us into the vaults, or the government wants to finally disclose all that it knows, it's very hard to tell what's going on. And though I have had You know, I've had a couple people tell me some very compelling stories, people who were obviously there working in technical capacities on known human programs who have made such allegations.
Sorry, so, share some of the stories with us. And did you believe in them as individuals, or, you know, did you think, you know, that they were misleading you or pulling your leg?
I know that I have been approached and fed stories that were obvious misinformation, and there were other interceptors who received similar, hints and things that were leaked to them, that I think there were people trying to see what we would do with information. And then there are other people who came with stories that, that were very deep in texture, and probably the best one in the end, I don't think it happened, but the great story that the aliens were here, they want our boron, and that we are trading the element boron for technology, and that there was this entire these facilities that were built around the United States to take their technology and to introduce it into our own systems, and the aliens got the boron, and there was a shadow government and all that. And they were very, they're great stories, and there was even one of that story actually with the boron. A friend and I, he was a producer of one of the HARP TV shows that I did back several years ago. We wrote a story for X-Files, which they liked very much, but it would have been so expensive to produce considering the amount of special effects that we would have required for the story that they never went with it. But that was the one that I always look back to as thinking that was the best story. There are other ones there's one that I certainly believe the guy who was a security person at the nuclear test site, which is right next to Groom Lake, and later he was also a contract security person at Groom Lake in the late 60s, who saw three disks there that had no markings, nothing inside that he could tell, though they did smell of ozone, but sort of the smell that you get when arcing electricity is happening around there. And his story, I believe, because I can prove, I've seen his past Q clearance that he had with the DOE and other things like that, and I know he was there, and he's very much a patriot. And I think, as time goes by, and it's usually a span of 10 to 20 years before somebody can really start talking about things. And considering that Groom Lake has been in operation since the mid-50s, and we're just starting to know kind of what went on there in the 70s and early 80s as far as the black aircraft and missile systems, there are still a lot of stories to come from there.
You're a no-nonsense writer. You're a no-nonsense researcher. What does your inner self tell you about the possibilities that we've been visited based on some of the things you think you know and you've been told?
Personally, my own sense of my own sense and understanding of the cosmos is that life must be everywhere, and I think it's even in our solar system. And I think that will be found out and shown to be true quite quickly, maybe even with the Phoenix lander on Mars here pretty soon. As far as them coming here, I don't have a cosmic inferiority complex as to why some people say, why would they come here? We're, just basically apes with atom bombs. You have to look at, maybe the hallmark of intelligence is curiosity, and that if some beings, who know what they are, what they look like, or what, chemistry they're based on, or any kind of things like that, it is a default position that I think that once you get the intelligence to be able to travel, it doesn't mean that you're going to be nice or merciful or any of those kind of things. So that may be just human concepts themselves. But I think as inherent in intelligence is the desire to know. And there would be no reason why I would think that we don't want to see life and go explore and see what's happening on other planets, that other beings wouldn't want to come here and see what we're up to.
Is it possible that if they are visiting us, Mark, they merely want to check in on their offspring?
You never know. The stories of time travelers, too. I think, interdimensional travel as well. I mean, we're finding out more and more within physics and cosmology that may allow time travel both forward and back, that there may be, novel ways of transversing space and time very quickly. So, who knows if they're us or we are them.
And you talked about the fact that we had some incredible aircraft now. We know what we have out there in the military. What we don't really know is what is available and out there. Are they, if we have this kind of aircraft, this kind of weaponry, are they using it at all, Mark? Or, I mean, what do they have it tucked away for?
There's a couple answers there. Sometimes these systems that we build that are dramatic in their abilities are simply to prove new technology. And it may not be always in the best interest or make the best sense as far as money to build them. So, or they may fail in some regards. You know, maybe only part of them are successful. So I think a lot of the things that we build out there sort of get tucked away in the museum or put away in vaults. But there are these other ones that I'm sure that are operational now, and we are using them, both particularly in the surveillance, in spying parts, the being able to rapidly surveil an area in an unpredictable way. And I mean unpredictable in a way that you can tell when a spy satellite's coming over. There are websites that you can go out and tell every satellite in the sky and when it's going to come over, and the bad guys can get those too. So you want to be able to be unpredictable beyond even our known spy craft like the U-2 or Rivet Joint or the new unmanned vehicles, that there are a family of very high altitude and some of them very fast systems that are used for spying. But I think there's also a family of aircraft or aerospace craft that are used for and can be used for, and some of them didn't quite work out well in the 80s and 90s, and we may be in the process of bringing up new versions of them that will allow us to strike very, very fast. And there's also a competition between a side of industry and the military that wants to put human beings into these systems and fly around, and then there's also another part of industry in the military that wants to make them unmanned for various reasons. You can have increased performance capabilities. If it gets shot down or you lose one, you don't have a pilot that shows up in a trial in the other country, or all those kind of things. That we need the ability to precisely strike a target within seconds, if not minutes, as opposed to our ability now to put basic metal or energy on a target that takes us hours now. Some systems, you know, the persistent drones that we have with missiles can get something somewhere fairly quickly, but we need that ability to be even quicker. So I think there is a family of strike aircraft that we haven't seen made declassified yet. I think there's also a suborbital space plane or several different models that we have built over time. And then there are also a family of very fast-moving strike missiles that we're working on. And then, of course, the fastest thing to apply energy to a target is directed energy weapons. And there are several known very large laser weapons programs going on, the airborne laser system, which is built on a 747 to shoot down missiles and to strike targets on the ground and to shoot satellites. There's a tactical laser being built to be put on C-130s and Ospreys. So the directed energy is really the ultimate wonder weapon that our military wants, as far as being able to say, okay, here is a bad guy or bad people on the ground or a target we need to strike, and you can get it there within a matter of seconds or microseconds.
Well, what's unbelievable, Mark, is with that kind of capability, we are so concerned about low-tech terrorism. I'm not talking about those who may get a radiological bomb, but it seems like we're up in arms. They continue to keep us on edge with low-tech terrorism threats and scare tactics when we have this kind of capability. I mean, what are we wasting all our money for when we don't seem to be able to use it?
You know, that is a frustrating aspect of it, and that is, you know, we can't expect an enemy to fight us in a way that meets our strengths, okay? What we are best at is dominating information. We are best at dominating airspace. We are best at surveilling and seeing the order of battle in armies and countries and things like that. And, of course, the bad guys that we're dealing with, the Al-Qaeda types and the other folks out there. And I also think there's going to be a rise of sort of Dr. No individuals who, and it may have already happened, people coming out of Eastern Europe and Russia and China and places like that who have their own designs on things that will use asymmetrical warfare, making the greatest advantage of where our weaknesses are. So we are in the place to where we have to be ready to fight other countries. You know, I would hate for it to ever come toe-to-toe with somebody like China, or, you know, I can think of Iran. There's many other countries where something like it happened where we would be fighting tank versus tank, airplane versus airplane. But when you've got people that know our weaknesses and are able to use our strengths, like using information, transporting information about using the internet, hiding among us. And we live in a society that we can never, ever fully, totally secure. So we basically have to have, like our British brethren, a stiff upper lip and sort of be able to take the punch and then track down who it is and make a greasy spot out of them and hopefully interdict them and stop them before they actually do something. But it is, I think you've hit something, you know, an idea right on the head, that it is very frustrating to have this massive military that we spend, you know, $500-600 billion a year on, and yet we can't track down, you know, a 6'5" guy living in a cave somewhere.
Yeah. Or have we, Mark, and we just don't want to do anything about it?
I have nothing to indicate that we would willingly let him go, but there is a certain level of incompetence that has been repeatedly demonstrated amongst some of our political leaders. And I know people in the military who know that they were very close at a couple different points early on in the war in Afghanistan to getting bin Laden. But, Rumsfeld, in some ways, I think, did a great job of marrying, you know, high-tech air power and information transmitting and special forces along with the Northern Alliance. And as soon as we made that rapid win in Afghanistan, and, you know, that was something that the Russians couldn't do in 10 years, there was sort of a hubris that came on that we could trust the other warlords, and that whatever we would do would be as easy and quick and low manpower intensive going into Tora Bora after Osama bin Laden, when he just bought off the other warlords and walked right out of there, you know, while our guys were listening to him on the radio. And of course, the serious miscalculations that were made on the political side of going into Iraq.
Well, and maybe too, maybe the Soviets at the time had no interest in the Afghanistan poppy fields, because it seems like something's amiss here now, Mark. With
it makes you wonder when production has gone nothing but up, and of course,
yeah.
the Soviets had a horrible problem with their guys getting strung out on junk when they were in Afghanistan.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I just think there's something right under our noses that we don't directly see, but we're being used as pawns. That's not what we're going to talk with you about tonight, because in just a few moments we're going to talk about HAARP for the rest of the show, but there's just something strange going on here. One quick question before the break here, Mark, because you are aware of technology and military aviation projects. This huge triangular-shaped object that so many people, including five police officers right across the river from St. Louis, saw years ago. I mean, a massive shaped, triangular-shaped object, dark, slow-moving. What is that thing?
I know well of what the report you're speaking of, and of course there were for years there were similar sightings that were made in Colorado and the Hudson River Valley.
And Phoenix. Of course, exactly. Phoenix was very big. Yeah.
I have fairly good reason to believe that we've built some sort of aerial aircraft carrier. Some people like to think of it as a stealth blimp or something like that, but some sort of partial lighter than air, also aerodynamically able to lift itself aerodynamically, that is stealthy, is quiet, probably, you know, some sort of electric propulsion or maybe some sort of novel propulsion that is used as a aerial arsenal ship to carry some sort of strike aircraft or reconnaissance aircraft, something like that. There's been patents that have been leaked out over the years. I know enough people who have worked on some programs that dealt with lighter and air technology and morphing aerostructures, literally things that can change their shape depending on what you need them to do. That would all figure into these very large, flying wedges.
Yeah. Do you believe they're out there, Mark?
Yes, I know enough people who have seen incredible people who have no reason to say what they've seen otherwise than, you know, to tell me what it is. And some people also who know military aircraft and missiles almost as well as I do.
All right, Mark, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. When we come right back, the rest of the program, HAARP. on Coast to Coast AM.